podcast?
Movie podcast.
Are you getting something at the bottom of my list that I never moved up, apparently?
Welcome to the Movie Movie Podcast, everybody! Episode number 166. I am your host, Tiggs, and with me, as always, are Russ.
I absolutely love this.
Peter.
I have so much work to do.
And Alex.
Where are we again?
Oh, boy, where are we? That is such a great question, Alex. Let me tell you where we are. We are at the end of January in 2025, and as we look back, we can see the entire year of 2024 from this mountain point view that we are on right now. That's right. It's time. It was nonsense, to be fair. But thank you for that, Alex. It is our time for our top 10 list of the year. Probably the most exciting time for most movie buffs when the Movie Movie Podcast top 10 comes out. This is, I believe, now just as important as Sight and Sound, is what I've heard.
We let all you morons who love to hear yourselves talk get all your bullshit takes out in December.
Exactly.
And we use the entire dirt bag bullshit month called January to really hone in, to make sure we see everything, to make sure we're 100% good, so that when you get these top 10s and the aggregate, you're truly getting the best films of the year. No bullshit.
Best films of the year. That being said, Possession is actually pretty good. I mean, of like all the January movies that have come out, it's actually not bad.
Oh, Presence?
Presence, that's it. Yeah, sorry, Presence, yeah. I couldn't even, so good, I got the name wrong. That's how much I'm haunted by it.
I just can't wait after Russ's speech how many times you'll hear the phrase, oh, I didn't get to that.
I was hoping that after Russ's speech that we would keep using the phrase Dirtbag January from now on.
It's my favorite band.
That Dirtbag January, new hit single out now. No, all right. So let's talk about this. For all you movie alums, MMAs, as some might call them, you know how this works. But for all you newbies, you MMNs,
We picked up a lot of new listeners around July, I think.
It's huge. We got huge in July. Let me tell you, like this is where it really happens. That's where everything picked up, and we are now huge in. It looks like the Nebraska. Oh no, sorry, I'm just looking at my top 10 list from a couple of years ago. We're gonna go round robin style. 10-9-8. Everyone does it, and then 7-6-5. Almost forgot how to count. 4-3-2. Oh, did that happen again? Then we're going to go through our honorable mentions, worst of the year, and our number ones. Now, going into this, none of us have any idea what the other ones have chosen. We have a running doc that we go through every year that Pete has been keeping track of that we like to try and guess what each person's next movie is going to be. It is very fun to watch, and you can't see it. Sorry, viewers, listeners, whatever. Okay, let's just move on. Let's get onto this thing. You know what? It's time to kick it off.
Just open up the notebook that you used to take notes on the top 10s last year. Flip the page.
Yeah, exactly.
And get back to work.
Now, I've actually been using the notebook, a DVD copy.
DVD copy of the notebook? Yeah, no, that makes sense. It makes sense. Probably it's getting a lot of use. All right. Let's kick it off. Who wants to start off this year's top 10?
Wow, voluntary.
All right, Russ, take it away.
Fucking knew it. I was ready. So my 10, which was my 9 until a few days ago when I forgot that I was missing a top 2 film, is National Anthem. So National Anthem, a movie I don't think anybody saw, but it was wildly affecting, about a young construction worker who was kind of like a day laborer who gets a gig working on like a queer ranch, and all of the finding himself that occurs from working in a place full of people who are unapologetically themselves. It is a Reclaim America type of movie. That shows that patriotism doesn't And like, you know, loving where you live and loving where you're from doesn't have to be like completely full of hating other people. But it's a beautifully shot movie. And if you like the band Perfume Genius,
ooh, I do.
They do a lot of the music in the film. Because I was like, why does this sound familiar? And it's like, oh, well, because it's Perfume Genius. And
that's awesome. Okay.
They're all over the soundtrack. It's just a really, really, really good, really, really small movie that I almost forgot I saw until I started going through my Letterboxd. So that is my number 10. I absolutely loved it. Highly, highly recommend. Because I know no one saw it. So in my ninth spot is a movie I think more people saw, but is still probably underseen, and that's Dee Dee. Dee Dee was, it just, I don't know, Dee Dee was awesome. It felt like if you like a mid-90s type of movie, or if Y2K is up your alley, you know, movies that really make you feel the time and the place, because this takes place in 2008. And, you know, just about a fucking little loser 14-year-old boy who, like, I don't know, wants to be cool and wants to, like, make videos and, you know, just be a fucking cool kid. But he's not. And just, it's, this movie really puts you in the a heart and soul and headspace of a fucking poser. Like, remember when that was the worst thing in the world to be, or to be found out? This really puts you, reminds you of how little we know ourselves when we are 14, 15 years old, and how that kind of informs a lot of the choices we make moving forward. Great movie, really funny, very touching. And I think Joan Chen, who plays Dee Dee's mom, is fantastic. So it was a really fun movie. But yeah, you'll get a lot of cringe based on, you know, when you were a kid watching it. I don't know, just great. Really fun movie. I absolutely loved it. I wish more people saw it, but I think this is the kind of movie that would do well on home video and or home video, like, I mean, DVD streaming, whatever the fuck. And then
VHS, my number, it do very well on VHS. Yeah.
My number eight is a movie. Actually, I don't think I ever talked about during the cast because I hadn't seen it, but Rebel fucking Ridge. Rebel Ridge is the best, might be the best movie for dads I've ever seen. It is not doing anything we've never seen before. Just a man in a town taking the law into his own hands to do the right thing for the right reasons. And it's just quite literally a star-making turn for Aaron Pierre. The movie does not do too much. And what's that? Jeremy Saulnier or Saulnier. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Always ends up making shit I'm super, super interested in. And I didn't want to give them credit for Rebel Ridge. It's like, ah, fuck, a Netflix movie. That's like my attitude to most things that Netflix makes, even when it's somebody who's like talented. But this was just so fucking good. And as soon as it was over, I was like, Aaron Pierre is going, if they don't have him cast as a major superhero in the next month, I'm shocked. Huh. And he is now Jon Stewart.
He's Jon Stewart.
Yes.
Nice. Oh, so, such a good movie. It's so much of a fun time.
Real fun. And again, not doing any, it's nothing you have, it's not like it's doing anything you haven't seen before. It's just doing what you've seen before really, really, really well.
Because so, they keep it so small scale too. Because this is like it driving into the town, and then you're basically just in the town, and it's kind of just like trying to get out of the town at some point, and that's it. And it's really
like
well done.
Not a drop of fat on this movie. Yeah, it is like everything it needs, nothing you don't.
Yeah, yeah. It's got that First Blood structure, but even quicker. Like there's no like him touring around at all. There's not even really establishing shots. It's him on the bike, him hit by the cop car.
And from there on out, like that is the pace of the movie. There is no fuck around time. It just goes. And it's like also feels like you're not watching something stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Totally. Like while it is for dads and this is like the a Hall of Fame Saturday afternoon movie. 100%. It's like got something. It doesn't have too much to say, but it's not brainless.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think watch this and take zero message out of it and not really it not be a big deal that you didn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
totally.
It's great. Really fun time. It's highly rewatchable. And yeah, I think Aaron Pierre, when we all look back on what made him who he is today, when he has a massive career in a few years, it'll be this.
Nice.
And not right. Old. Oh. Where he played mid-sized sedan.
That's a damn.
What a great, still one of the best names of all time in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So that's all my 10-9-8.
Who's going next?
Alex, you're up.
Oh, no. All right. So
my list got all sticky.
Oh, God.
Okay, so I'll get out of the way right now. I wish I, of course, yada, yada, yada. I wish I'd seen more. Excuse. But I still did get to see a bunch of great movie films this year. And number 10 for me is Heretic.
Nice.
Not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. I did not love where it kind of ended up. But I thought when it was just like, almost just like people debating things and fucking with each other.
Yeah.
There's a really good movie right there.
The Jordan Peterson of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that like, it's a good movie too about hypocrisy and
yes.
faith and like, and I think that like, that is what resonated with me is just like, as like someone that's like, probably like for as little as I watch movies these days, terminally online, you see people like this constantly, like Hugh Grant's character, and they can be, even when they're right, they can be that for the wrong reasons. And I think this is a good job of exploring that and how toxic it can be.
He is so good in it. This was narrowly cut. This was on my longer short list.
It was
honestly right next to Rebel Ridge. They were right next to each other on my longer short list. It was just such an incredible, again, very like small scale, but just like so much going on with just how well the acting is, and just like it's so good.
And number 9, it's got to be the movie that I've seen the most all year. It's Trap. Yeah, Peter was writing it before I said it.
Oh, baby.
Dude, this movie rules. It's so bad, and it's a comedy, and it's a movie about, you know, girl dads, bi girl dads, for girl dads. This movie's an excuse to give M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, what, like 18 songs to sing? And right, it's like...
Like, he is the lead of the movie. Like, when you consider who Josh Hartnett is, think about all the machinations M. Night had to go through just to be like, my daughter gets a fucking movie with a full fucking soundtrack.
Well, yeah, because he puts all the money up himself. Like... That's been his MO since, I think, The Visit?
I think you're right.
I think so.
Yeah, that was like his return to whatever,
like low small budget scale. Stuff. It was like a $5 million movie, mm-hmm. and he just did it himself. Yeah.
But like, I've gotten to the point where I've like become annoying about this movie, and we'll like put it on for people, and like we'll be like, you gotta see this. Like, if there's a lull in the conversation, I'll put on Trap at this point.
Yeah.
It's,
an invite to hang out with Alex is a trap.
Yeah, it is.
It's a trap.
I don't know why I adore it so much, but it's got its claws in me.
Awesome.
And number eight, this couldn't be more of a different movie. Is Sing Sing. I feel terrible having Jim Tutter this in the same breath as the other ones. No, that's a different movie. But Sing Sing is probably like the most earnest movie on my list. It's just like inspiring and wonderful, and like having these like, there's one of the occasions this year of outsider actors that
which this movie got fucked by when it came out. This, I don't know what made them think that this was like a summer movie.
And yeah, like summer limited that never grew. Yeah. The release was so stupid.
Like this movie, we'd be talking about it and talking about Clarence Macklin and,
yes,
and all of the great performances. If this shit just came out like literally even October, they would have been in the awards conversation. But I forgot. I like simply forgot about it. And I see it on your list and I'm like, this is going to be one of those things that like when I look back on my list, I'm going to say, like, how was that not on mine?
And as you know, I kind of like existed in orbit of like programs like these. And like actually like watching like the impact, like I don't know, it's something that like I really thought it was just a beautifully done movie, and Colman Domingo deserves a truckload of Oscars.
He's the most due person, probably the most due male actor out there.
Yeah.
And with that, I'm turning it over to Tiggs.
What? Me? All right. Let's kick it off then. We are going to start off with number 10. It's the nostalgic movie that I wanted this year. You know, we had a couple of them that came out, Y2K and so forth. But you already heard Russ talk about it. It's Dee Dee. Really, really enjoyed this movie. As someone who grew up in the suburbs pretending to be able to skateboard but not being able to skateboard, and watching a lot of skateboarding videos and never being able to skateboard, and you know, moving around like through friends groups, this really does capture a time and an era incredibly well. And just like this really short period, this is a couple of days or weeks that it really takes place over. It's really fantastic. I like to put this in the category of the I Need to Call My Mom movies, which I did basically immediately after seeing this. It's incredibly well acted. Oh my God, when the grandma's like on the ground, I was freaking out. I think it definitely speaks to a very specific age group currently, not unlike, you know, eighth grade, or mid 90s, I mean. I absolutely love Dee Dee. And then let's kick it over to number 9. One of the rewatches I've been doing recently, kind of like trying to get ready for this list. I had a long list of things that I wanted to rewatch and got through them recently. And I had this a lot higher on my list until this rewatch, and it came down, still makes it, but I really love Thelma, you know, like, oh, yeah. I just think that it's just so much fun. June Squibb is so good in this movie. It's so much more of a Mission Impossible movie after rewatching it than I even remembered it being when I first watched it. I think all the performances are great. I'm a Squib stan. So anything that you put in front of me that she's in, I'm gonna kind of go crazy for it. It's heartfelt. It never goes like, oh, there was the first time I watched it, I really thought that the grandson was just gonna end up being just like some like pothead who's like really completely messed up, and they don't really ever. Yeah, he still probably is, to be fair, but it never really goes into it, and it just seems like a grandson who just really, really loves his grandmother.
Yep.
And that being the relationship for it is really great. I love the whole old folks home sequence. Her stealing like the bike and everything. And Parker Posey as the mom.
She's great.
She's great too.
It's never punching down too.
No.
Yeah. Right. Which is like, yeah, that probably it's always itself. There was this and Beekeeper that both came out that were very similar in a lot of ways, and yet very different in all the exact same ways.
It was a year of accidental double features.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that Thelma definitely stands out above it. But it's a movie that I think I could just put on in the background and watch whenever. Number 8. Man, this wasn't even on the list, but it was something I was like, I should probably rewatch it. Like, I didn't have it that highly rated at the time. But maybe I'm missing something. Maybe it's just more fun than I gave it credit for that first time I watched it. And good God, just give me a dumb, fun, funny action movie like Bad Boys Ride or Die, and I'm going to go nuts for it every time. Just so enjoyable all around. Like I have remembered watching the trailers for this and just thinking about how terrible this was going to be, how out of touch it was going to be, how awful Martin Lawrence like looked in those trailers.
Oh yeah.
And then going into it and just being like, this was pretty fun. This just feels like like a Bad Boys movie. It feels like just a good Bad Boys movie. And now that I've rewatched it a couple of times, I think it's the best Bad Boys movie. The story is fine. It's whatever. It's not what you're coming there for. but I do really love just the fact that Will Smith or his character, Mike Lowry, has like a nervous breakdown basically while trying to defend his wife. Unable to do it, and then get slapped in the face, and it kind of like knocks him out of it. So like there's so much going on here. It's really, really fun, and I think it's another movie that I could just put on in the background and just like leave on and just enjoy while it's going on. That's number 8. So I think that now we go around back to the beginning. I believe is that we hit everything.
Yeah, I think we got everyone.
Yeah, I think we got everybody. All right, great. Yeah, all right, Peter, go ahead.
All right. Okay. Sadly, I'm not going to stick up for myself here because it's going to be a bit of a echo chamber at the moment. Because for me, number 10 is Trap. Nice. As Alex put it perfectly, just a silly movie, a movie that knows exactly what it's doing and at what level it's doing it. It never seems like each clever thing it does, it doesn't celebrate itself, which I think was always a knock on Shyamalan. Mm-hmm. That like, oh, he thinks he's so smart in this. He thinks this is a clever thing. I think it's a movie that's just there to be fun. Josh Hartnett is fantastic. God, I love Trap. And then my number 9 matches Tiggs, and it's Thelma.
Nice.
A movie that I thought was going to end up in my top 10, and a rewatch really hammered that down. And I'm in the same boat as both things that were said already. I think the Fred Hechinger character really unlocks the movie for me in a slightly different way. And the sort of the generational differences in the way we take care of each generation and the way we think we're treating them and the ways we're actually treating them and how similar it is. There's a really great moment at one point when Clark Gregg, in the middle, Parker Posey's husband in this, puts his Apple Watch on Fred Hechinger just to track where he is, and it's like it's just a repeat of them trying to make Thelma wear the alert bracelet thing.
Yeah,
But I think it's such a nice little note that puts a button on it. And as I think Tig said, like, or Alex said, like, it's never punching down. I think it gives everyone a great deal of dignity. And both Velma not wanting to be this kind of person, but also Richard Roundtree's character kind of loving where he is in his life.
Yeah.
I think is such a lovely addition to make there. I think they could have easily, like, talked down at, especially, like, older people in senior care.
Right.
So I really love that. And absolutely, for me, two of the biggest snubs, June Squibb is incredible. So and Richard Roundtree in his final performance.
Yeah.
Yes. Something small, like, R.I.P. Richard Roundtree. He's so good in this movie, and I think he plays that character perfectly.
In the like generational divide, is also there's one of my favorite moments is when, you know, after they can't find her for a while, or no, after she gets duped, and it's you know, the parents, and they're talking about putting her into a home, and it's the parents, and Parker Posey's just like, she got fooled by this thing. We have to put her into the home. And Fred Hirsch is just like, you got fooled by it too. Like, there's like,
right.
And I love, like, I just love that exchange between the whole thing where, like, they just keep making these generational divides and just kind of like juxtaposing them all together. And yeah, I think that was great.
Yeah. What a lovely movie. It's on Hulu. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's
it is
90 something minutes, I'm sure too. My number 8, probably only because I haven't rewatched it and it suffers from the part 2 disease, is Dune Part 2.
Smile Part 2.
is Dune Part 2, a movie I remember absolutely loving in theaters and I have yet to rewatch, even though I own it. In the sense of, like, that suffering of, like, I don't want to watch Dune Part 2 unless I carve out time to also watch Dune Part 1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't found that. But I don't remember having any issues with this movie. I remember loving all the performances, especially Javier Bardem. I think he's incredible in this. And as a fan of the books, I think it made some of the smartest changes to its source material than we've seen since Lord of the Rings.
Oh, interesting.
I think all the changes that they make to Chani's character are so smart and update the book and really make it clear that the tag that Dune gets put on it, which is like the white savior narrative, that it's truly never been, because the really not barely even subtext of the movie is that everything that's happening is awful.
right.
I think Chani's character makes that so abundantly clear that there's nothing good about to happen through any of this. And that's not the character in the book. She's just a dutiful, not even technically real wife, because he marries Florence Pugh at the end of this one, or is about to. Spoiler alerts. Dune Part 2, as I said, maybe if I rewatched it, it would be higher, but this is where it's living for me at the moment.
Is the same. It didn't make mine. It was on the short long list, but even when I first saw it, I hadn't seen Dune in a while. Yeah. And so I knew that if I was going to go back to Dune 2, then I'd have to watch them both again. And I was like, I have the time, but I'm probably not going to do it.
Yeah. I think that's why it's landing so high or low, depending on what order you really read this list, but that's where it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think too, is like, people kept saying how this makes the first part even better. And I think I was like waiting for sometimes that click of like, oh, here's the point where it's going to like make all of these Dune movies make sense again. And I didn't really feel that. I don't know.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. I thought that, again, this is how you really build a world. But this is such a part two it was really difficult. Same thing. I was like, I have to fucking to like remember where I felt, I have to go all the way back to the beginning. I can't just watch Dune Part 2. I got to start all over. I don't have the time for that. And if I don't want to do that, maybe it's because it's not that. And that's kind of where I got.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. As I was building the list, and I know that that's not true. I just know that I don't have time to do like 6 hours all over again just right. to find out where something ranks on a list.
Absolutely.
So
that was my exact feeling. That feeling of like, I don't really want to rewatch it right now. And then every single time I would look at my list, I'd be like, well, do I actually love it this much?
Yeah.
If I'm not rewatching it, because, you know, Trap, I saw twice in theaters. And I think there's one other movie coming up that I saw twice in theaters as well. But so I kept questioning it, but I could not kick it off my list. I came close to maybe thinking about doing that, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah, sure.
Let's swing around to
round two.
10, 9, 8 to Alex's number 7.
Oh, all right. My number 7 is Conclave. Conclave. This movie, I don't know why it really wait, what's so funny?
Just kind of going Conclave and then just got me. It took me a second.
Okay. It kind of reminded me of Lincoln in a lot of ways. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like turning a process into a thriller. And adding like thriller elements to it. I'm
the ticking clock and like,
I'm like always
that whole
weirdly a fan of that technique.
Yes.
And I think it's a really beautifully shot movie, and it does a great job of like showing how just like bitchy they are.
Oh yeah,
and just like how disingenuous they can be at times, and I think it's just I don't know, I was glued to the set the entire time watching it, and contrasting that is my number 6, which is A Real Pain.
Nice.
Kieran Culkin is awesome in this.
He's so good.
Yeah, he is probably gonna win.
He should.
Yeah, definitely. But we all, I think, have had someone this kind of like chaotic and charismatic in their life, in your life. And I think it was just like the one scene at like the dinner table.
Oh God, yeah.
That's really what like got it for me. Where, like everyone just like talking about him behind his back, in front of his face. Like it was Jesse Eisenberg's directorial writing debut, right?
Yeah.
I think he might have directed another.
I think he directed, but I think this might be his first like writer director situation.
Yeah.
I thought it was really great.
Yeah,
man. This was on my this was another recent rewatch, very close to it. It was one of my 3 honorable mentions. It was between this and Dee Dee, really at the end. And I ended up going with Dee Dee, but yeah, it's really good. It's really sad. It's really like both sad and funny and everything.
It's like the way that like the title card comes up at the end.
Yeah, on the other side.
I've never had like a title card be impactful before.
Yeah.
Like totally.
Yeah, I think it missed for me, but not by a ton. I actively, while you were talking about it, moved it up my own list anyway, because I was like, yeah, you're right. Because I think the thing that works the most for this is which is surprising for Jesse Eisenberg writing it, that it's not just about his annoyance or his concern for his cousin, but almost the things that it asks him about himself.
Yeah. And it's
his own character, I mean.
Exactly. No, I completely know what you're saying. And number five is, again, couldn't be more different. The most fun movie on my list, fucking Kneecap.
Nice.
I loved this. And, like, it was one of those movies that, like, Peter was saying how, like, I think a couple times, like, G Chad being like, oh, Kneecap is so much fun. Gotta see Kneecap. And I kind of brushed it off a bunch of times. And then finally rented out like a screening room and watched it.
Well, that's cool.
And I think I just like smiled the entire time.
Yeah.
And like, again, outsider actors fucking killing it.
Yeah.
The DJ guy in this is amazing.
Absolutely shocking. Like, everyone I've talked to has been like, well, I assume that the two MCs played themselves, but I thought the DJ was just an actor. But no, that dude's the dude.
That's the dude. Yeah, exactly. And no, it's so much fun. It's so well done the entire time. Yeah, this was another shortlister for me. Yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, this is, it's punk rock. Like, I just, there's something like electric about that I just really enjoy.
I was also like, I can't believe I've never heard of Kneecap before.
Yeah.
It just missed me completely. Once I got close to the end of the year, there were so many other things that became a priority, but I'm sure I'd like it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Russ, you know what didn't miss you? Going next.
Ooh, well done.
Ooh, I see what you did there, and I like ye. So coming in at number seven, this batch is like my this is my art house corner, because coming in at seven is Nickel Boys. We talked about it, I want to say, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, fairly recently.
Yep.
It is great. It is based on a book that is fantastic. It actually made a book I vaguely remembered. It made a book that I remember enough still feel like really, really new. And I think it was shot in a way that I thought would be initially distracting until I realized, I think this is the only way this could have been shot. It's fantastic. It's beautiful. It's sad and great. And Anjanou Ellis is a huge missed opportunity at the Oscars this past year. And Fred Hechinger, love to see you, guy.
He's having a moment, huh?
He is. Remember, who was that ginger who came and kind of disappeared? He came around the same time as Timothy Chalamet, and he hasn't done shit. Yeah, he's coming for Lucas Hedges Corner's hard body.
Yeah.
But he's great. He's great in everything he does. I loved it, and I felt a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
And
I do think Anjanou Ellis Taylor would be my best supporting actress winner. And
Unrelated. Yeah, she was better in this than she was in King Richard.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably, and then this didn't get a directing nod, right?
No, just a cinematography, adapted screenplay and picture, I think, maybe something else, but those are off the top of my head.
I gotta look at director and just double check and see if I feel like something like it should have been there as well. But that's a decent haul for a movie that is really niche. Then coming in at
this did not get cinematography. Go
what?
Fuck yourself.
Also crazy. Also crazy.
Oh, forget it then. That's dog shit. How are you gonna miss it? Like it elevated the fucking art form. Whatever. I get mad. at some other point. We could have a whole fucking Snubs
cast. That's our next cast.
The Snubs cast. So I'll do my six, and that is The Brutalist. It can be at times an unforgiving theatrical experience, with the exception of that beautiful, beautiful intermission where you can go to the bathroom, get a drink, and lock in. I drank no beverages for the first part of the movie because I now have a 40-year-old man's bladder. But to be able to settle in with a couple of snacks and a beer for the second part of the movie when things like really pick up, super enjoyable. I don't care that they used AI a little bit in the making the accents work a little bit better. The movie is one of the most beautiful $10 million movies I've ever seen in my life.
It is crazy that this is only $10 million. This is such a huge major feat.
one of the things that to me makes Brady Corbett the winner for best director is I've been on a lot of movie sets. I acted for forever. A lot of it's just wasted time and wasted takes. So we just talked about what we want to do. We went around, we all came to a consensus, and then we just shot it once. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, it's like we're spent, like the money is once you start rolling. So we just made sure we knew what we were doing. There aren't thousands of takes. We just do it right. And I'm like, huh.
Novel.
What a novel way to make something. But I think the end result was a movie that really, this will join that like 20th century, like the 2000s pantheon of great movies. A lot of the movies we talk about won't ever show up there. This will be like in that No Country for Old, There Will Be Blood category, because it kind of feels like it shares some of the DNA of There Will Be Blood anyway. Great movie. Absolutely loved it. Just carve out a whole day.
Yep.
It's a day.
It's a full freaking day.
Even at home, I can't see how this wouldn't be a day, like, because I think you'll probably go a little longer on the intermission, but not too long, because I feel like if you go over 30 minutes, you're out of the movie.
I think
it's a well-placed intermission that injects the highest emotions of the movie into it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But still I don't know how you do a half hour in between.
Yeah, I would say if I get it for at home, you can fuck around, try to really lock in with the movie for the first bit. Give yourself a longer intermission by a couple minutes. I'd say 20, and then try to lock back in, because I feel like anything more, you're kind of losing the momentum. And this is a long movie. You don't want it to bleed into having to take another day. So check it out or go see it in theaters. It's great. It'll probably be playing through the Oscar season because I think it is the front runner. My number five, we just heard about it pretty recently, and that is A Real Pain.
I like watching Peter in real time.
I actually say it a little slower because I like to see that little cursor like, whoa! I can like feel the anxiety. A Real Pain was great. We do all have that person or those people in our lives that we look at them and we're like, how are you living the life you are living? And it's like, it's a criticism, but it's also like a measure of praise.
Totally.
But it's, and I think like for me, I felt at times Jesse Eisenberg's embarrassment. And then at other times I was like, dude, give him a break. I like would go back and forth because Kieran Culkin's so fucking mercurial. But I think one of the scenes I love the most was when they were in the graveyard.
Oh, and yeah. Definitely.
And I was like, it was one of those scenes set where I was like, all right, Kieran, I'm with you. Okay, now you're doing too much. Oh, no, I'm with you again. Oh, nope, you're doing too much. And imagine being on that roller coaster as like the cousin, friend, buddy that you always have to like, you can't ever just have a normal fucking day.
Well, I think it's also, it's like you pair it up with like touring concentration camps and stuff like that. Like
so now it's like, it's not even like, how you feel. It's how you feel other people might feel. And all of that is being layered on top while you're watching a guy who's not thinking about any of that. Yep. It's fucking wild. But yeah, it's just like so overwhelmingly interesting and good. And Kieran Culkin, I do believe it's his Oscar to lose, but I also see them giving Ed Norton something for being around for a long time. They love doing that shit.
But I don't think people like him.
I know, but I think if he becomes an actor who's never won an Oscar, that feels weird.
Yeah, true.
He is very good in Complete Unknown.
But I won't know because that'll be the last movie I see.
It just looks so fucking boring. This will be the last thing you see.
Like, it looks so fucking boring, dude. So, Peter, tell me about your 5-6-7 or 7-6-5.
Name this batch for me. This is going to be Peter Island, because two of these movies I'm going to guess no one else has seen but me. But this one, I think I'm going to be the only one that has it. But I recently rewatched Love Lies Bleeding.
Okay. Yeah. That's on yours and only yours.
Yeah. I think that movie rules.
Very good.
Yeah. Even the end.
Yeah.
The end's so weird.
Yeah, the end. Yeah, baby. I especially after like doing a lot of catch up and a lot of like finishing off stuff I needed to see and having really high expectations about a lot of stuff and think like, oh, especially for me for Brutalist, spoiler alert, not on my list. God, I'm going to lock into this 3-hour movie and fucking rock. Like, I think expectations hurt me with a lot of stuff. In this movie, I watched it the other day and it felt like it went by in 40 minutes.
It flies.
So great. It flies. The performances are fantastic.
Yep.
I just the tension of it works so well and it goes places that you're really not expecting your first time around. So seeing it again, all those little movements, I think, work even better. All those kind of little twists and turns in the story. I think Anna Baryshnikov's character is so good. She's the one obsessed with Kristen Stewart. The ending stuff for me, I think, really works because there are several times in which Katie O'Brien is larger than life in this movie. During the Dave Franco scene, she is like her head's touching the ceiling almost. So they plant that stuff, that feeling of hers of being a giant in early. So like the end of it with its magical realism really works for me. And as someone who's
about to ask that.
Yeah. And it's as someone who didn't really vibe with Saint Maud, except the very last moment of that movie, I was so happy to see this director return with something that I completely was on the same page with the entire time. But as I said, I utterly know that's one for Peter. and then starting off the list of things that no one else has seen, my most recent watch of a new movie on this is the Oscar nominated I'm Still Here.
The Joaquin Phoenix, rap documentary.
I was gonna go and see this recently, but I didn't. I really want to.
Nominated for Best Picture, nominated for Best Actress, foreign language. I'm not sure what else. The actress recently won the Golden Globe for drama. This will be my like most honest thing is that maybe my feelings of this movie is very much colored by recent events. If you've been following American politics, things are bad, underlined, capitalized, bolded.
Depending on how you see things.
Yeah, well, what if this podcast turned hard right? Do you think we would?
The Right Right podcast.
We'd make money.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would probably make a lot of money.
Murder Death Coffee. Yeah. If you like your coffee to have more suffering, drink Murder Death Coffee.
That was good.
That was pretty good. I would probably drink Murder Death Coffee.
Because it is a Demolition Man reference, right?
With a K, coffee, yes.
The central performance is really fantastic. It's a movie set in Brazil. I'm sure because a lot of people don't know what it's about. It's a movie set in Brazil in the 70s. They were under a military dictatorship, and it's the father of this family, who's a former congressman, is taken by the police one day. And then it's, what does this family sort of go through and do after that moment? And trying to figure out, like, are they ever actually going to see this person ever again? And that sort of kind of terrorizing feeling of, like, you have no power over what could happen at a drop of a hat. And I think expertly underperformed. So I do believe she's very deserving of that Oscar nomination and that Golden Globe win. And I think you guys should all see it. Would be my
no, suggestion. I really want to.
I plan on it before the Oscars.
Yeah, it's checking off my list of the Best Picture nominees, and I am also with Russ. I might watch Complete Unknown like right before the Oscars start. Because I cannot bring myself to go see that movie.
No.
And then my number five, right? That's what we're on.
Yep.
Another movie we're on number five.
Only I've seen is Hard Truths. The new Mike Leigh movie.
Oh, nice.
It's an absolute travesty. My Best Actress winner, not even nominated, Marianne Jean-Baptiste is so fucking good in this movie. Because I know people don't exactly want these things, but it's not exactly, when I say this, a COVID movie, but it's definitely a post-COVID movie about not kind of being over all of the shit that you kind of feel and like the fear that you have of like people and your relationships and all and like all your anxiety about this stuff, like without ever specifically being a COVID movie. It's really fantastic. And there's so much like really incredible tiny details about every other character but our main character that really paint such this incredible picture of this family and where they're at. And there's some scenes that like you could completely lift from the movie and don't really contribute to the plot, but because it just tells you a little bit more about how these people are acting together in the midst of this like incredible freight train of a person that Marianne Jean-Baptiste plays. It's so deeply interesting. So as I said, that's Peter Island, everybody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm right. Now you guys have not seen either of those two.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I have not. Yep.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Definitely.
The Truths was definitely like, that was one that was truly on the list. I just didn't get around to it.
Yeah, that was, they had the free screening weekend over at, where was it? Kips Bay. And I was going to go for that. And then, I missed it that weekend. And then they were doing another one the next weekend, but that was out in like Jersey. And so that's why I ended up not going.
Is Kips Bay your go-to?
No, they just had a free screening there.
Oh, okay. Because I try to go to that as much as possible in Manhattan.
Mm. Oh, well, then let me know when you're going next.
Yeah. To peek behind the curtain, as this podcast started, I'm still here. I scrolled down to the bottom of my list and found that I'm still here was listed at number 30 because I added to the list but never positioned it.
Ah, that's where it was. Okay, that was the thing that you were trying to move.
I had to figure that in because I was also 2 seconds away from, also to spoil some stuff, from kneecap jumping from 10 to 8.
Oh, but now it's number one instead. Good to know.
No, but now it's number 11 because it got kicked off the list because I had to quickly put Hard Truths into the top five. I'm sorry, I had to put I'm Still Here into the top six.
So Hard Truths also moving. Wow.
Yeah, I really think some of that stuff would change if I had a little bit more time, you motherfucker. On that note, let's hear about his 765.
All right. Number seven. coming in. Let me see. How do you pronounce this? I think it's Conclave.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah, nailed it. All right. Yes. No, the Great Conclave, Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow. Give me everybody in this movie. Give me a thriller. Give me a mystery. Give me. I have been watching so much Columbo recently and Foyle's War and everything, all these things, that this was just the perfect, just thriller, light thriller mystery that I was waiting for. I loved all of the voting scenes, the countdown, that the actual like counting up the votes, the explode, like all of it just works so well. Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk more about this as it keeps going on, but I didn't really know what to expect with Conclave at all. I remember when I first saw the poster for it and who was in it, I was just like, that could be funny, but it's not a comedy. And so it ends up being really good. Just how everything unfolds as they're uncovering different dark truths about each other. Oh man, it's
hard truths.
The hard truths about. Oh wow, I wonder why I said that one. But no, I think this is. This was the one that I forgot on my list. And as I was scrolling through, I was like, oh crap, how did I forget to put Conclave on here? Can't wait for, this is a movie that in like most years I would want everybody to win an Oscar for this one. It's weird to come back to this year and think that I've listened to a number of like podcasts or videos where everyone's just like, there isn't like a standout number one, but there's a lot of like really good movies. And when I think through everything, kind of what's been nominated, what has been, there are so many that I think, well, no, that should probably be the best picture winner. That should be the best actor nominee and nominees and winners. But this is, the more I think about Conclave, the more I'm just like, that should be the winner of everything. It's not, nothing's going to win from it, but it's incredibly good. Really great. Very fun movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just make a bag of popcorn and just watch this and have a good time.
Yeah. And you don't have to be like bought in on like giving a fuck about Catholic shit at all this to resonate.
Yeah. 100%. It just happens to be the setting for the mystery that's trying to get solved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Now, number five, this may be the only Tiggs Island. Here. Oh, no, sorry. Number six. This might be my only Tiggs Island, and that is The Fire Inside. Though it was not Evangelion, although it could be.
And now,
the boxing movie?
Shinji is still in this one, though, right?
Shinji is in this one, yes, 100%. Yeah. I really like, it's not that it's doing anything different or crazy or even, you know, you could think about what was it? The woman in the sea or the young woman in the sea or whatever it is. It is the boxing movie or Ryan Destiny, you know, as Clarice Shields, training as a boxer, going to the Olympics, Brian Tyree Henry as her coach. And it's just an exceedingly well executed one of those. And those are the movies that I will fall over for every single time. I think that the performances are really great. I think that the boxing scenes are really great as well. Again, and it's you know the story going in, even if you don't know the actual like story, you know exactly where it's going to go and how it's going to end. But they just execute everything incredibly, incredibly well. I think it's well worth seeing if you haven't seen it yet. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was a bummer I missed this one, because the best reviews I've heard about this have said like they were very surprised about how much further past the like glory boxing this movie goes.
Yep, it keeps going.
Okay, when that inspirational sports movie ends, like what happens next, like kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, and it's made me really interested, and it's a bummer I missed out on it, especially because I love Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah, and that is like, and because like the Olympics happens like 40 minutes in, and there's like another hour in the movie after that. It's very good. Yeah, I really, really highly enjoyed it. Number five, we're up to number five. Okay, number five was I was like convinced this was going to be my number one for a good portion of the year. Even like kind of coming into writing these lists, it was one of the only like 5-star reviews I gave on Letterboxd this year. And it is 100. It is Borderlands. That's right. The one everyone loves. Claptrap. Now it's, I saw the TV glow. Another, this movie does something like so interestingly that where it takes like that nostalgic feeling and like, and it grips you with it and then it rips it away from you. And so you have both the nostalgic feeling of looking back on the things that you used to love or you used to watch. And then you're also like present tense feeling of the things that you used to love, how you see them now, how you saw them then. And it's terrifying. It's funny. It's well done. I there's Justice Smith is so good in this.
He's so good.
It's incredibly well directed, incredibly well acted. Just the entire final sequence as well, where like everything just pauses and you're just like, what is happening right now? The incredibly like the crazy just like time shift as like the last 10 minutes and like, well, and now adulthood and now here it's. It is like just everything that I would want from like an A24 like indie psychological horror movie. It's just fantastic.
And it's incredible that like a lot of the horror comes down to personal like personal demons and choice and all that. Like it uses nostalgia in a way that I think that like people at that time used those pieces of media too.
Yeah.
As like an escape and as like, as 100%. Like part of like the queer community and all that, like stuff like, you know, Buffy was like,
huge.
That was how so many people identified.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's so much like, there's, so much going on in this movie, just like subtextually, textually. And I think that it captures, I appreciate it on one level. And I think that there's probably a dozen other levels that that this can be appreciated on.
And now that you're talking about it, I'm realizing like this was a soundtrack that I listened to so fucking much. It hit all those like nostalgia points for me. Like it felt like something, it felt like a mixtape I would have made a long time ago. It was fucking sick. This movie was total vibes.
Yep.
Yes.
100%. Oh yeah. This was one that I was going to rewatch and decided not to because I wanted, after like Thelma moved down the list and that was an early one, I was like, you know what? I just need this to be solidified top five. Let me leave it there. And like, if I watch it again, I don't know what'll happen. So left it there. All right. We're moving on to, here we go. We're in the home stretch now, fellas. We're in the home stretch. Peter, throwing it back to you.
Just think, has anyone ever done the heel turn of saying, now for the next part, we're going to start with me.
Yes, we have.
Oh, have we really done that? Wow.
I believe so.
Oh, that's fun. Okay. Number four, the movie that America said, for some confusing reason, no thank you, we're all going to forget about it. And we're all going to watch it, and we're all going to forget about it. And that is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
Rewatched it recently.
Another movie I saw in theaters twice. And I just don't get what made people not want it.
Like, I'll never understand it.
Like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air gif, why didn't he want me? I don't understand why no one saw it and why we stopped talking about it afterwards. I think it's gorgeous looking. I think the action is even smoother than Fury Road, even though Fury Road is like 10 times better. That's not a fault on Furiosa.
No, not at all.
It's so good.
and the fact that he almost puts a more interesting message into this movie that absolutely didn't need one in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Is incredible. The way it deepens Fury Road is incredible without feeling it's referencey or anything like that. I don't understand.
No, yeah, this I rewatched this. This was one of the things that I was rewatching to see, like, does it make the list? Does it not make the list? It's definitely it's in the top 15 at this point. It wasn't even in like the top 20. But rewatching it, it's just so incredibly well done. I think the only thing that kept popping out for me was the backgrounds, which I know is not. Fury Road, I felt like you felt like you were there and you were driving, and this one just felt a little bit more artificial.
I think it worked. That works in its favor, though. Oddly.
No, I don't disagree. Yeah. But that was your.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a weird fable quality to this.
Totally. Which is there should be, like, go into that ending with the like, it's all so good. I love that the chapter breakdown of it.
Yeah, that was actually helpful.
This was the year of chapters.
Year for chapters.
Like. Yes.
Chapter's so in right now.
And Chris Hemsworth, like, one of his best.
So good.
Like, you know, he's got it in him. But we don't get to see it that often. And it's like, this had to be like so freeing to the point where he's like, I want George Miller to do the next Thor. And I'm like, now that is a movie you would not be able to stop me from seeing.
Yes, 100%. Is that really, is that going
to
happen?
He wants it. He just said he wants that to happen. That's not going.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
But
it's such a bummer. We're not going to get the other planned Mad Max movie now, unless something miraculous happens. It's such a bummer.
It'd have to be self-financed, and is not possible.
I don't think that with the insurance needed for a film like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a bummer.
You have to be like megalopolisly rich.
Yeah.
Sell a couple of vineyards.
Or should get a vineyard.
Yeah, sell it.
The club.
Sell it.
My number three, a movie that has not budged around this area, and yet I haven't rewatched because it hasn't come to disc yet. But I've been really, really wanting to, because I'm interested in how it's going to settle with me. Because it's also a movie that seemed to be slightly forgotten now that award season came around. Even though it was nominated for a bunch of stuff, I don't think we're as jazzed on it anymore, and that's Anora.
Okay, yeah.
A movie that won the Palme d'Or, was an early season front runner, and I think it's just quietly like slinked off.
Yeah.
And
it's very good.
Yeah. And even though there's a surprise Best Supporting Actor nomination up on the board, I still don't think this movie is anywhere near the level where a lot of people might have been expecting, but it is a hoot.
Completely. It's a fucked up fairy tale.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
And I'm excited with knowing all the beats in this movie. I'm so excited to rewatch it. Really being sure about where she's going and where these choices are leading her, and even especially watching that one crazy night sequence when they're searching for him. Knowing
that's the best part.
Yeah, knowing where that's going to end her up. And it's less of a madcap and more of like a slow march to her own like demise almost is going to really change this movie. And I'm so excited to rewatch it. What a flick. As I said, even though it's got a surprise nomination on the board, I think it's kind of like, as I said, like completely like brushed aside.
Yeah, I think that's probably that night when they're like in the diner and they're just like eating french fries in the diner is probably my favorite scene in that entire movie. And I really liked Anora. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was exactly what I was kind of hoping for as well, with it's not quite as intense or depressing as Safdie Brothers, but like kind of is in the same way.
That ending though.
Yeah, well, yeah. that's that ending was brutal. Oh, that ending. But it's not as like frenetic, you know. That's I guess that's what I kind of go for.
But I feel like off topic, is Sean Baker like, are we gonna like, is he all right?
Probably so. Not. I don't think so. There's nothing about his movies that would make me think so.
Yeah, Sean Baker is a man in need of a wellness check.
Yep.
I'm still excited for what he does next, though. So, like, let's see where he's
going. Totally.
I'm so interested to see, as I said, with this being sort of also the end, but winning the Palm, I don't know what spotlight his next movie gets, because he's definitely not a guy who's going to accept more money to make a picture. Like,
right.
He's going to keep it small. He's going to maybe shoot it on an iPhone, all this different stuff.
Of course.
But I'm very excited for we'll see what he does next. I can't wait for news. After being slightly annoyed by Robert Eggers' next two potential pictures, I'm really for some very exciting director's next work news. My number two, gotta believe we are hearing about it soon as well. So excited with the nominations it got. I ordered the 4K and it was supposed to come last week and it's on back order and it will be here next week. And I'm so fucking excited to sit on my couch, watch it while telling Caitlin when she can and cannot look at the screen. It is The Substance, baby.
Oh, nice.
What a fucking flick. What so fun. I'm very happy that Demi Moore got that nomination. I think we're marching towards an incredible Demi Moore Best Actress win.
I hope so. That would be so great.
My biggest issue with if she doesn't win, it even makes the Jamie Lee Curtis win seem dumber. Yeah. That we're having this like long storied actress come in with something weird and different for them, really kill it, have this great narrative on the campaign trail. And if she doesn't win, I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is a masterpiece. I'm still going to look back at that Jamie Lee Curtis win and be like, oh, that's kind of silly.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful. As I said, even though Marianne Jean-Baptiste is my winner, hopeful for a Demi Moore win. I'm not going to say too much about The Substance, except I just can't fucking wait to watch it again and again. Nice. And I think it's back in theaters right now, and I got a carve out.
It is.
It's on second run. Yeah.
Yeah.
So fun, and let's hook around, because as I said, I can't wait to hear about it. I think probably just that one again, maybe another that I've put on this list. Let's hear from Russ.
You got it. So I am, we've heard about this. It made two other lists so far, so I'm just going to come out and say that my four is Thelma.
Ooh,
love it. Went into it without any drop of knowledge about it other than go see it. It's, John Wick with old people or whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. I don't want to know a goddamn thing. So I went after work one day to the Jacob Burns without knowing one thing about it and got to just experience it. And it was so fucking cute and like funny, and I think it did a good job of showing us that we sort of infantilize people once they get older, and we've probably infantilized our own children, and we sort of infantilize everyone and think the only people who can do anything are people in their middle ages, and that's not 100% true. And I think that this movie did a good job of showing you that everyone has agency and that the choices don't all have to end up being the same when you get to a certain point. Like, just the same way it's okay to be on your own, it's okay to want to be around people and be taken care of a little bit. There isn't any correct answer or wrong answer. It's just what's best for you. And I think we as people try to make our answer for us the answer for everyone. And this movie is just so heartfelt, touching. June Squibb was great. It was too small to break into any awardsy stuff and probably not that essential, but yeah. I just fucking loved it.
Yeah.
So that is my
four. Her first starring role in her entire career, right?
Yeah.
Which is like
wild.
Wild that like she's been around for this long and it's her first starring role. And Richard Roundtree has been around for fucking ever and can still, in his last role, knock it out of the fucking park. It's just, also goes to show we should be seeing more variety of people in films. Like, not everything has to be a fucking sexy 28-year-old Chalamet, whatever the fuck. Like a complete unknown. Ugh.
I'm so happy to see Thelma return to this list. I really thought we were that was all we were going to see.
No,
ruling nines.
That's no, Thelma will always have a place in my heart. It might be the movie I've seen it is the movie I've seen the most on this list. Nice. I fucking love it, and it does something to me that it's just beautiful. All right, so my number three, which I'm hoping I see on some other lists, but I may not because it was out for 4 seconds, is Strange Darling.
Oh,
nice.
Strange Darling, basically, it just took the horror genre or the man after a woman genre and fucked that shit up 6 ways to Sunday. It's hard to talk about it without giving a lot of it away, but I can say that the chapter shit was super interesting. Giovanni Ribisi, look at you, director of photography in a movie.
Shot crazy.
on film. It's just he's good at it, I guess. Maybe being around actors and being on TV and shit for 30 some odd years will give you some implicit abilities that you don't even realize you have. But I thought
he learned a lot doing The Other Sister.
Oh God. But Kyle Gallner, a secret in a lot of horror movies guy. Mm. Yeah. He's in a lot of shit. And
I didn't realize that.
He's carving like a Dan Stevens-esque run.
Ooh, yeah, he's in Smile, one of the Screams, I think the first rebooted Scream, Jennifer's Body, like a bunch of shit. Like he's a guy that he's ends up being in a bunch of these movies. And I remember him from Smallville. But he is great in this, as is Willa Fitzgerald, who that character and that performance does
so good. Yeah.
That right, it destroys this movie.
She's great. Totally. And it's so funny because I just watched the Scream TV show.
Ooh,
which she's also in, right? Of. Yeah.
And it's such a 180. And like giving this also like that grindhouse feel.
Oh,
yeah. It's just totally like, it's
perfect.
So that was my three. And in what'll likely start to vault this into the higher echelons of our collective awards is The Substance. There's a lot that will be said and that can be said about this movie. And it is deserving of all of its praise. Maybe some of its criticism, and if you have a problem with it, that's a you problem. But I think Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley as just co-leads are fantastic, and I do feel like if one got a nom, the other should have as well, because they are so essential to each other's performances.
Really, totally.
But the movie is, it's beautiful, it's disgusting, with a point. Yeah. And in a full theater full of people who have no idea, just because they're not film literate, of how gross it's about to get. It'll never be like that ever again. Like, that was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had, watching people watch something, because I was like, I know enough about movies to know this shit's about to get fucking wild. And it does. And it is just so unforgivingly insane and relentless. And I think that's like what I would sum this movie up in one word, is it's fucking relentless.
Oh, I went out for shrimp right after.
That's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life. That's the grossest thing in the whole fucking movie.
That it really
is. Without question. So yeah, that's
the grossest.
Yes. Yes.
Incredible.
So Tiggs, you're up.
All right, coming in at number four, one of the more recent ones that I saw, and since seeing it, I've definitely, you know, been asked, like, oh, what movie should I see? What that's been nominated for an Oscar is the one that I should go and check out. And I have told everybody, you got to go see Sing Sing. I didn't really know exactly what to expect. I didn't like watch the trailer. Really, all I had known was what we had talked about on the podcast. Colin Domingo is so amazing. Clarence Macklin, and just like his character's like transformation by the end of it is so good. It's so funny, heartfelt, heartwarming, depressing, devastating. The parole board hearing and Colin Domingo's like face during that whole sequence is like, just give him the, again, we're going to say this bunch here, but give him the fucking Oscar. Like, everything about it, it made me be like, we should probably do another show one day, guys. Like, what do you guys want to, maybe we just get the band back together one last time? There was something about it that just really hit me there. I really love this. It's I'm waiting for it to like now come to streaming, just so I can, you know, buy it and then show it to everybody. It's just a special movie. Really, really loved it. Number three, I think we talked about it. Yeah, we've talked about it. I think this is probably, well, obviously not number one or my favorite movie of the year, I think it's probably the best movie of the year, and that's Nickel Boys. It's such a well-crafted, well-executed, like, novel meets movie meets film. Everything about it is just so incredible and impeccably done, from how you feel the entire time while watching it, how you watch the characters, the camera tells its own story, as much as it's showing you a story that's going on at the same time, even to the point where it starts to get like, it's not like avant-garde, but like when they're on the train and just like, it's just showing the lights passing by them. And it's like in this sequence that's of sped up time. And it's just, it's all feelings and emotion. And I think it's one of the most beautiful, just amazing accomplishments of like movie making in a while. Cause it shouldn't work. Like, that's the crazy thing, is that how they made this movie and how it's done, it should not work. How the book ends and like just the story that it tells, and like how, like, you can't capture that on a screen. How would you do that? And then they do it and it works so well, and it's incredibly lyrical and just and yeah, go see Nickel Boys. It should win everything. Again, everybody should win everything is really what it comes down to. So let's go there. Number two. The movie that I saw the second most of any movie this year, and probably had the second most fun seeing, and that is Hitman. Just so much fun. Glenn Powell just hitting, just kicking in a door and being just like, I'm the new charisma. Let's do this. And just give me him in anything. I'm ready for it. It doesn't matter. All of the acting is amazing. Linklater just putting together something that is like real, fake, both. Don't know. Don't care. Can't wait to see it again. It's just a movie that is infinitely watchable because of the performances, because of the story that's being told all over it. I just have so much fun watching it. Glenn Powell just has so many different characters that he plays. It's like an even better version of the Master of Disguise. You know, that's really what it kind of comes down to. If only Glenn Powell did a Turtle Man, you know, then it would have been number one, but it didn't. So it ends up being number two. Alex, take it away.
All right, here we go. Now is the point we're going to start seeing some repetition here. My number four is Anora.
Anora.
Yeah, this movie's fucked up, but it's so good. I don't know why. Like, it got me on every level of just like the madcap levels, the depressing ones. Like, it got me on both. Like, it was fantastic.
I like that you said your tone of voice was opposite for the two things you just said.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The madcap ones and the depressing ones. Like, it should have been the depressing ones and the madcap ones.
I keep you on your toes, baby.
Yeah, he does.
Number two is coming up after this one. Yeah. Number three is Strange Darling.
Wow. Double darling.
Yeah, this is one of the few ones that I saw multiple times in the theater and loved it.
Wait.
Sorry. No, I only saw it once in the theater. Never mind.
I was like, wait, what?
But yeah, absolutely loved it. I thought that like its structure, its narrative, and just its style went together great. Number two, y'all know what it is. You got to pump it up. It's The Substance.
Wow.
I fucking love this movie. And from the moment I saw it in the theater to watching it at home a bunch of times, mm-hmm. It doesn't fail to enthrall, disgust, everything. Yeah. It's The Substance, baby.
There it is.
So let's hear the...
What do you want to do first, Alex? Now that you've gone last, do you want to do honorable mentions first, or do you want to do worst of the year first?
Let's do worst of the year first.
All right. Who's got some nominees for worst of the year?
I've got three nominees for worst of the year.
I also have... Actually, I have four for worst of the year.
I could have one more, but I just don't want to, so I'm going to have three.
Okay. I've got three.
Okay. All right. Start it off, Russ.
All right. So I'm going to say my worst of the year are Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Matt Webb.
Which one? Sorry.
Adam Webb.
Oh, Madam Webb. Okay.
And Joker Folie à Deux.
Yep.
They were all dog shit and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
All right. Alex, give me your three.
I actually can echo those first two.
Okay.
Madam Web, and even though Madam Web, I think it's still, I stand by what I said last
time. It is watchable.
It is eminently watchable. Like, it's so watchable. And Beetlejuice was nothing. I saw it in 4DX.
Ooh, that sounds like the right way to see that movie.
How much did you spend?
$27 for that.
Oh my God.
And I had a friend in town. And we were like, all right, let's do this.
and like that couldn't save it from being like in one ear out the other.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And what was the fucking Jack Black Santa movie?
Oh, oh.
Dear Satan.
Dear Santa. Yeah, I think it's called Dear Santa, but it's actually Dear Satan.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hated it.
I almost watched it. I decided not to. I couldn't bring myself to it.
So then, Peter, what's yours?
Peter, what do you got?
So we're all tied up on Joker Folia Do. The two that I'm going to add to the list, that just because I know you guys didn't say them because you didn't see them because you're smarter, better people than me. And that's Borderlands.
That's on mine.
Real Turd Burger. And I'm upset because we all saw Joker for Joker to be the worst, but the true worst movie of the year is The Crow.
And it's also on mine.
I wouldn't do it.
But it.
Those so my four are Joker, The Crow, Borderlands, and I don't know if this is the worst or the most disappointing, but I really dislike Drive Away Dolls, and I had such high expectations for that.
I didn't like
movie.
It either. I really didn't like it, but it was almost. I looked at my Letterboxd reviews just to try to find another like really bad movie, and I was like, I hated Drive Away Dolls that much. Yeah. I don't remember it being so bad, but apparently I was livid when it was over.
Well, I remember it because I saw it so close to Love Lies Bleeding, and Love Lies Bleeding was so good, and then Drive Away Dolls was so bad.
It's really, really bad.
Yeah. All right. Are there any? It's Joker 2, right? Like this is there's nothing
because
else that
all of ours. I think it's got to be Joker 2. If, as I said, if we were all psychopaths, it should be The Crow.
I saw The Crow. I hated The Crow.
I just didn't Joker hate 2 myself is worse. Enough. Yeah, I didn't hate myself like enough for to see Crow. And The Crow was there's no way that movie's 2 hours. And yeah. Joker is like everything that is wrong with movies. Oh, yeah. You think you're smarter than us? You can't just say that when you make a piece of shit. Yeah. Well, it's just smart because if that's the excuse, it also has to then be smart.
I love it how is, badly it bombed.
It's enough. It's like the most nothing I've ever seen. And it's similar to like Emilia Perez. Like it's not good at any of the things it's trying to be.
Yeah.
Be good at one of them. It's awful.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's the worst. We have now given worst movie to both Joker and Joker 2 in the years that they've come out, which is great.
Fair.
Worst. We're really good at this.
Yeah, we're great at this. So for honorable mentions, I'm going to kick it off right now. So Real Pain, we talked about it a bunch, so I'm not going to go too much into that. Also, Evil Does Not Exist, which is by the director of Drive My Car. It's like an hour and a half. It's about a
it's shocking for him.
I know. It's
it's so short. It's such like a quiet movie about like a community where they're like a big corporation wants to come in and put a glamping site in. And it's about like the two people that have to try and sell it to the community and how the community is just not having it.
I have that disc from the library. I'm currently staring at it, but I did not get to it.
It's so good, and it's probably the movie that this was really like between this, A Real Pain, and Dee Dee. This was the hardest choice because this was in my top 10 up until like today. Yeah. The end of this movie like haunted me for days afterwards to where I just kept like looking up stuff. I was like, what does this mean? What is that? What's going on here? Like, what happened? Because it's so you have to see it. It's really good, it's short.
Yeah, what that John Krasinski is really working for the oil company.
That's exactly what it is. and Bird's great. I really like Bird.
Ooh, I want to see Bird.
I forgot that even came out.
It's incredibly well done. It's on Mubi. It's the word. I definitely think it's worth. It's really worth watching. It's the great performances all around. What an amazing rendition of Yellow as they try to make a drug toad discreet its drugs. It's wild. It's like fantastical but real life until it's kind of not, but it still is. It's I really liked it, but narrowly cut as well. Peter, what are your honorable mentions?
So as I said, Kneecap was the one knocking on the door of the top 10, which probably would have been in there if I correctly placed I'm Still Here earlier. I told Alex earlier when we were talking, like we were saying, like it's not a bad year, just a weird year. Last year in my you had to get to number 17 on my list before you hit a 4-star movie. And I have 4-star movies in my top 10 this year. So it's just a different year. And I was telling Alex, I was like, it's one of those years in which I can guess that my 11 through 20 might be someone's entire list. So my 11 through 20, just to read it for movies that we've heard, just skipping some that we haven't heard yet, just in case they pop up. Kneecap, Rebel Ridge, Nickel Boys, Conclave, Hitman, I Saw the TV Glow, A Real Pain. Like, all of those were close. It was clearly a year. I would guess this is one of our most sort of jumbled up year that you wouldn't realize after the trio of substances that just hit. But it's a very, very weird one. But I said Kneecap closest for me. There's another one that's at number 12 for me, but I'm just going to hold off on saying it in case it's Alex's number one.
You already know it is.
Yeah. So, Alex, why don't you tell us about yours, and then I'll know whether or not I'm correct.
Okay. So my honorable mentions are I Saw the TV Glow. Furiosa definitely there. Thelma.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, also the one that we didn't talk about was It's What's Inside. That was a surprising.
The Netflix movie. Right. I
didn't even see this.
Yeah, neither did I.
It's like the Netflix body switching movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it's like surprisingly really fun.
Huh.
And nice. If I had finished it, maybe Late Night with the Devil.
Oh,
hilarious.
But I just never got around to, but I liked it, what I saw.
I think yeah. Night with the Devil, I don't think you would.
Yeah. Smile 2, I thought was okay.
I thought it was very good. I really like Smile 2. Alien Romulus as well. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah. Did that was another in one year out the other, huh? Kind of.
Yeah.
Ooh, one I'll specifically shout out that's currently streaming in a number of places that I think people should watch. I think Tiggs logged it. Depending on how much patience you have, because it is surprisingly long, but Hundreds of Beavers.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I've heard it's too long.
Phenomenal things.
Yeah.
Adam texted me and said, "Have you seen it?" And it's your number one movie of the year, right? And that's when I went and watched it, and it's just a little too long.
Yeah.
Another, not that we keep going on these things, but Civil War, that, I feel like
that was on, that was gonna, that was one of mine as well.
If yeah. You could just give like just what's his name, Clemens, his moment in it is like fantastic. The rest of the movie, I kind of didn't really care for.
I really enjoyed it. I'm gonna try to breeze through anything that hasn't been on somebody else's list yet or their HM. Conclave was in my 10th spot till I realized that my second favorite movie of the year somehow wasn't on my list.
I was getting that in for number 3 before you said Strange Darling.
Yeah. No, it was I looked at, I was like, something's missing, and I was like, oh, the movie I've seen almost as much as Thelma. So yeah, Conclave. We talked about it a week or two ago, but I really enjoyed Baby Girl. It could have got there, but it just missed the mark.
That just came to streaming this week.
Yeah.
Yes. Check it out.
To watch that post.
And then it was way, 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 way too early in the year. But Problemista.
I never saw it.
That's in my top 20. Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. But then I was like, yeah, you enjoyed it, but you haven't watched it again. So you're going to end up being on the eligible films list and not the main stage.
Hilda is so good in that movie.
Oh yeah. And like, it's nice to see her do like weird, but like I think Julio Torres and her are a phenomenal combination.
Yeah.
And he unlocks the right amount of weird that makes her not insufferable.
Yeah.
Pete, was what you thought is Alex's number one? Did it pop up, or are you still going to hold back that honorable mention?
I'm going to type in a letter.
Yep.
Okay.
And we'll see. Real quick, a movie that we talked about, I just want to kind of bring back up for, I think Russ and Alex did not see this, but the Indian action film Kill.
Oh, so good.
Oh,
yeah, that's in my top 30.
Oh,
yeah.
I know it, but I haven't seen it.
It's really good.
It is my favorite very, very late title card.
Yeah, it's like 40 minutes in.
Interesting late title card as well.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I'm so excited to watch Evil Does Not Exist, especially after catching up to Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy is so fucking good.
I haven't seen what?
that same director is like Triptych. It's like the three short stories. Oh. I think you can see it.
Oh no, I did not see that. No, what? Okay, this sounds great. Director is great. Also, if you haven't seen his Criterion Closet, it's also very good. I watch it all the time. I don't really know, not for any good reason, but it's just like, it's fun. It's good to watch. All right. Are we there? Is it time?
We're there.
Yep.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's kick it off. Russ, what's your number one of the year?
From the moment they said it was New Rochelle, New York, and I was
classic.
Like,
yep. Okay.
I know that place. That's where I go to the movies often. And where I want to buy a house one day, if we can fucking afford it. I knew that Challengers was the movie for me. The fact that it was, I think it was over 2 hours, but it felt like it was 5 seconds long. They cover so much ground. And I don't know how we're not sitting here at the fucking looking at the awards how are we here without a Josh O'Connor, a Zendaya,
so weird,
a best score, a best picture, a best director? Where are all of those
original screenplay? Yeah.
Original screenplay. Yeah. Like, this was a fucking home run.
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly what they should have wanted. This is anointing like the new stars, which like everybody wants to do all the time. Like, this movie was unbelievable. And when it came out, like between just social media, TikTok, like the world, like this was a movie, like, again, I work at a fucking school and like my movie kids would come in and be like, did you see Challengers yet? And it was like, they were going every weekend to see it.
Like, so crazy.
And I was like, you guys are awesome. And I didn't expect, like, this is a movie that if anyone sees it, they love it. So what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I obviously, it came out really, 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 really early, but
yeah,
I thought that like it's Luca Guadagnino, who's a known quantity, and Zendaya, that alone, with a friggin' Nine Inch Nails, friggin' Reznor and Atticus soundtrack.
So
that good should soundtrack. Carry it. Maybe not to wins, but to at least noms. Yep. And that shit didn't fucking happen. But Challengers was great, and I am pissed.
Yeah, I might as well go next, just as a heads up.
There you go.
I am lockstep in every single thing that you said. Challengers is my number one. No movie got me so fucking amped for what it's doing at the end. Like, as we talked about when it first came out, like, the whatever moment you clue in to, he's about to put the tennis ball in the place.
Oh, yeah.
Still takes longer for it to happen than you would expect. And the tension of when the fuck is he going to do it is so invigorating. But what I love about the movie is after that moment, I had no fucking idea what was going to happen. Yeah. I was just so excited for that singular moment that I didn't even think about the movie continuing after it.
Yeah.
So from that point on, yeah.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think people were, let's say, very hung up on like one aspect of it, like the horniness of it. But I think that like,
well,
which granted, but I think that it also explored like just like the intimacy of competition in such like an interesting way too. That like something I never really thought about.
Yeah, the as Russ said, the score not being nominated is insane, absolutely insane. The I think two or three tracks off the score were on my Spotify top five most played.
That's awesome.
Because I mean, to be clear, I only listen to film scores. But it be, not being nominated is bonkers. Like the Brutalist score is incredible. The Emilia Perez score is dog shit because that movie is dog shit. I'm surprised about how much
I. Great.
Yeah, I don't super love the score to. Wild Robot. I've been listening to it recently, and that got nominated.
I don't think I'd be able to pick it out of a lineup.
Yeah,
and I think that is a problem.
Same. Yeah, the challenge score is incredible. Of a string of incredible Reznor Ross collaborations. Like,
yeah, they don't miss.
Yeah, for me, their Mutant Mayhem score I think is
it's great.
Like too good for that movie, and I think that movie is incredible. That it still doesn't need that score. This one is better. So as I said, this movie, I was close to jumping out of my seat by the end of this movie. Like I could almost like looking around the theater, hoping to catch eyes with someone. I really wish I saw this with someone else when I saw it the first time. God, the excitement of watching this movie. So Tinks is kind of the surprise. So let's go to Alex, because I've already guessed it. We've already written it.
This is an Alex movie. It's a different man. And there we go. It's I almost didn't say what it was.
We're all reading it, so.
Sebastian Stan plays an awesome piece of shit.
So like, is he like a really good actor or what?
I guess.
I don't know. He's played, you know, depending on the character, you know, whatever.
But like a movie just about like you can change everything, but you can't change yourself.
Yep.
And it uses, I guess, like kind of like uses the magical realism that like in a perfect way for me. Like, by the way, last year, if I had seen American Fiction, I think that probably would have been my number one.
Oh,
I love it. Yeah.
Just because it hits like the right amount of like cynicism for me. And so did this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just because it took place entirely in Bushwick.
I mean, it's part of it, though.
Yeah, sure. You know, I've been to those bars. This is just like one of those movies that like, boom, just clicks with me. And I really loved it.
Yeah, as I said, this is sitting at 12 for me. If I was like struggling so much, as I said, before the I'm Still Here switcheroo, struggling so much to figure out my love for Thelma and Trap and how much more I think I think Kneecap and Different Man are better movies in some respects. I was really struggling to fit this. Absolutely think Sebastian Stan was nominated for the wrong movie.
Yeah.
Agreed. 100%. Completely agree.
Totally. Yes.
Adam Pearson, huge snub.
Adam Pearson is so like, again, it's like, I love when you have a character that you hate, but you can't be mad at.
Totally.
Yeah. And I said, in terms of like interesting double features, I think watching this movie in a real pain back to back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very fun. And I was not surprised. Both of them. Showing up for Alex as I was expecting Different Man to top the list. I think those are perfectly coupled together.
Okay. Yeah. So in that case, you know what? Tiggs, why don't you take us home?
I don't know.
I have no fucking
clue. Me neither. Is Evangelion? It's got anything else?
3.0 plus 1.0. No. Movies. We go to the movies, we get transported to other worlds, we take a ride with the characters, with the director. We go in there kind of expecting something. Maybe it's maybe we're going in to see a drama, or maybe you're going in to see a comedy or horror movie. And a lot of times, you know, the movies will have to be
Jesus Christ.
Really,
heartbreak feels good.
Really put down into just one category, because if they try to do too much, it always falls apart. It always falls apart, no matter the movie. You know, it's kind of a normal thing. It's biting off too much that it can chew.
This is the closest I've gotten to watching Challengers in theaters since then. Which is, I'm on the edge of my seat.
I'm so going through my own Letterboxd diary to just see if I can get a hint, and I have no fucking clue. Keep going.
So, you know, when a movie can kind of be all things, that's when it becomes, and it doesn't fall apart, and it does it all equally well. It's something very special. So when, depending on the mood you're in, the movie takes on a new form, takes on a new meaning. It's something just incredible and thought-provoking and fun and funny, and it's something that you always want to go back to and you always think about, and you just really remember what it's like to be going, that you're in a movie. And this year, if you had told me at the beginning of this year,
okay,
that my favorite movie of the year would be by M. Night Shyamalan,
whoa,
and it would be the ultimate expression of what he has done, I would have told you you're crazy. But holy crap. This is a movie that when I was talking to Colm, and I was just like, you gotta go see Trap. But when you see it, just imagine there's a sitcom like audience in the background while you're watching it, and you're gonna get a totally different experience out of it the entire time. I think that the performances in this are amazing. I think that they're pitched to like 11 or 15 or 9, depending on like how you're watching it and how you're thinking about it at any given time. I think that this is fully M. Night Shyamalan. Right. And this isn't like an original take. This is something that like they talked about on Blank Check. But this entire thing it's about him. Like, he is the guy. He is the person who is just bringing this horror into the lives of his children. And how does he actually resonate with like bringing his children into this type of a world? There is no movie that I've seen more, that I've enjoyed watching more, that every time I watch it, I find it either funnier or scarier or just like more dramatic. And every time I'm just like, how's this thing going to end? And then to that final scene where just in the back of the car and Hartnett like breaks out and just starts laughing, and then it just cuts to black and you're just like, this was freaking pitch perfect.
I don't know what else we can say.
It's kind of perfect.
I have been planning out this speech for a while. I'm happy that it made a couple of lists, honestly. I didn't know where this was going to land for everybody. I knew that we all kind of enjoyed it, but I didn't know if it would be jumping up or down or kind of in the middle, or just be a bunch of honorable mentions for us. So I'm very happy that that Trap made it to a bunch of places right now. Whew. Man, what a good year.
Yeah,
honestly.
Good, fun, weird year. Like, in the fact that, like, as we were putting together this list and, like, tallying up stuff, it was like, I have an idea of, like, what are some of the things at the top, but I had a good idea of what was going to be number one and two, because I was pretty confident that me and Russ were lockstep with one and two, and that was going to
– yeah.
And that was enough, even kind of almost without Alex, that would be enough to put those movies at the top. Right now.
Yep. And they are.
And they are. Like, so the fact that Strange Darling barnstormed its way to the
yeah, that's crazy.
Here
it's wild.
I think this might be our lowest total. Actually, no, our lowest was 2021. Barb and Star winning with 24 points only. 2021. Unless I'm seeing something wrong here. No.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
So yeah, Strange Darling at number three, Challengers at number two, very much as I said, off the strength of us, and then Alex though being the one that puts Substance up to number one.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's not three number twos. That's like That's a formidable showing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't believe Hitman didn't make anyone's list.
That's the thing. Like this year, there were so many things that like almost made it. Like Hitman was one of the best experiences I had in the theater this year.
It's good. My number 16.
And I think that like maybe the fact that there is like so much Glenn Powell this year, I think maybe he canceled himself out.
I even liked Twisters.
I like Twisters. I like Twisters.
That was on my.
I like them totally. Both.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was just so much this year that I figured there would be a lot of variance, and there was. Like there's not. There are some similarities to the list. Things start to kind of level out once you get to like 4 through 1. That's when you start to see a little bit like everybody. Once you get to the top 4 for everybody, the only things that I don't think show up anywhere else on anyone else's lists are just Furiosa and Hitman.
Yeah.
Everything else is listed somewhere else.
And a different man.
But like when you consider there's 12 potential movies and only and 9 of them are the same for us.
Yeah.
Like
I honestly expect it to be. I thought it was going to be a wildly different year. It was like putting the list together, and maybe I just feel like this at the end of every year where I'm just like, this is going to be a tough one to put together a top 10. I don't know. Like, I think I probably have like 7. Also, and then when I go to like the short list and there's like 45 movies on it, I'm just like, okay,
here we go. And also, I thought The Brutalist was going to make it onto more people's.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know how many, like it's a tough watch, and that you're creating a barrier of entry right there. Like it's work.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but I also get why it's not on everybody's list, and like my personal list versus what I think should win a Best Picture, considering everything nominated, aren't the same thing. Like The Substance, I like more than The Brutalist, but The Brutalist, quote unquote, should win Best Picture, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But what I care about and what the Academy cares about are two very different things, apparently.
Yeah. And we all have a couple of movies that don't make anyone else's list. Like there's some a decent like diversion.
I think everybody has at least one movie that is on no one else's list.
Yeah, like Alex has got Heretic and Kneecap, right?
And The Different Man, yeah.
Got and A Different Man.
Bad Boys, Fire Inside,
TV Glow, Hitman,
Four,
National Anthem, Rebel Ridge, Brutalist,
Lies Bleeding, I'm Still Here, Hard Dude. Truth.
Oh yeah, the Peter Zone.
Furiosa, yeah, basically his
the middle of his list.
Eight through four.
Yeah. Peter Island got bigger than I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so. That middle part of it was like that was really Peter Island. Furiosa was like it was there. It was on my short list. It just didn't quite crack through.
It was so close, and that was my rewatch. I was just like, does this make it? Does this not? It was one of the things that I was like rewatching that Alien and Smile too to be like, what, did any of these make it?
So last year on our top 10, 9 Best Picture nominees were reflected. This year it's only 7.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And I have 2 lone Best Picture nominees on my list, and that's Dune Part 2 and I'm Still Here,
right? And Bad Boys Ride or Die, that's on there, right?
Yes.
It's one of the 10. Yeah, okay, cool. What else is we're gonna get to the Oscar cast soon. I'm still like kind of like mulling over all the nominations, but I'm gonna watch Emilia Perez at some point. I really do want to, and I'm Still Here, I really want to see. I think it's still playing at the 1-2-3, which I'll probably that's like the best theater near me.
Yeah, I'm going to be dragging my feet to go see A Complete Unknown and wondering whether or not I actually watch The Apprentice as we get up towards Oscars.
I'm pissed I didn't see it earlier because now I really don't want to.
Yeah,
I floated like so on. It was either Election Night or the night before. I was like, hey, should we watch The Apprentice? My wife was like, no. I was like, all right, it's probably the right call now.
Yeah. Because outside of those two, I make it through all the way down to screenplays and having seen everything except Complete and Unknown and whatchamacallit and Apprentice.
I think Apprentice, Amelia, I'm Still Here. Does Hard Truth nominated for anything?
No.
No. Okay. That might be. I need to look at the list again, but I think that those are the three that I'm missing right now.
Yeah, I've got my work cut out for me. But we've got a lot of time.
Still got time. Still got a month. A little over a month until it comes, right? It's March 2nd, something like that.
I forget what
date. Yeah, I think that's right.
It's early March. So, yeah, March 2nd.
Nice. All right. Well, what a year. What a year it's been.
And now for our customary Alex singing the outro based on this year's movies.
Come on, Diggs, it's the Evangelion theme.
Oh, how niche.
I love how that reference missed its audience of one.
Well, I would have expected you to be doing Fly Me to the Moon. How every episode ends. Well, but I'm glad that we're here. And we're all still here. All right. So let's end this thing right now. It's been a good year. I'm really excited for what's coming out in 2025. What is everybody excited for in 2025? Anything? Nothing? Cool. All right.
I think, we'll talk about this. I haven't looked at all. We'll talk about that on the Oscarcast.
Yeah.
All right, then we'll talk about that in the Oscarcast. It has been almost 2 hours. You can find Russ everywhere on social media, so it's incredible. You can find Pete as 12 Angry Peters.
Yep.
All right, on Letterboxd, you can find me on Letterboxd as Trapa as Johnny Tiggs. Alex.
You can find me on my friend code is...
Have you already taken out your Switch friend code?
Actually, I wish I did. I don't know.
That'd be pretty good. All right. Well, regardless, all good, all good. Well, thank you all for listening. And we'll see you soon for our Oscar cast here on the Movie Podcast.
Yeah, because Amelia Perez and Wicked nominated for score.